So, Satyananda Maharaj, I have to ask your blessings before I start speaking. I was speaking yesterday about the salvation. I spoke a little bit about this sutra, which is the last sutra of Vedanta Sutra 4.4.22, Anavritik Shabdat, Anavritik Shabdat, where Shiva Vyasadev conclusively states that there is no return. There is no return according to Shabda or by Shabda. In other words, from the sound vibration, you can achieve this most elevated state of liberation. And I was speaking a little bit about the practices of different religions, how different religions are selling salvation, and how different religions are trying to market their religion as the most sure means for salvation. And my main goal here is to describe the mechanism of salvation in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, or in our religion. Because we are being the preachers of this path, of this cult, of this religion, we have to be sure that our product, our goods, which we sell in the market, is good. That really it brings not some kind of fake salvation, not some kind of cheap salvation, which people can just buy by little price, but the real salvation, and how this process, very scientific process, is being described in the Vedas. How Shabda or revelation or sacred sound can ultimately bring about this elevated state of consciousness, which is called salvation or liberation in our tradition. And I also explained the need that everyone feels in this world, the need for salvation, because everyone acutely experiences the transitory nature of this world. Krishna stresses this when he says, Dukhalayam Ashashvatam, when he says that Mamo Petya Punarjanma, that one who comes to me doesn't come back. Why? Because there is no need to come back. Because this world is Ashashvatam. And basically that is the main reason why we need salvation. And we have to understand this very, very clearly, that one cannot be happy in this world because of the temporary nature of this world. Because this world is by nature is very temporary place. We need some other state, the state which is permanent, the state which is not kind of, this state is not final which we are in, and everyone knows this. And therefore, also I said that therefore the disease of fear comes into the heart. Srimad Bhagavatam explained this. As soon as you turned away from Isha, from the Lord, Ishada petasya viparya yosmritih, and baya, the fear appears in your heart. And fear means, when we want salvation, it means that we're fearful. It means that we acutely experience this, the tottering nature of this world. Like Prabhupada, he explains this, that this life is like the tottering on a very shaky platform. And therefore the fear comes, and therefore viparyaya smriti, when we don't remember the Lord, we turned away from the Lord and we remember something which is unimportant. And this is called perverted smriti, perverted memory. And this is our Alzheimer disease. Yeah. When we don't remember something which is most important, and this is actually the very dangerous disease, and we have to understand this. We have to know the symptoms of this disease in order to seek very ardently for the salvation or for the cure of this disease. So, and then I finished yesterday's topic explaining this feeling of incompleteness, which is very humorously described in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. This is actually the description of our illusory attempts to be happy in this world, how God provided us with different cheating devices to have the feeling that we are happy. to have the feeling that we are complete, whereas we cannot be complete unless and until we reach the Supreme Lord and this supreme state of union with the Lord, and association with the Lord. So Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is very emphatic in this sense, and it basically, you know, laughs at the attempts of stupid, foolish living entities to be happy in this world by saying that, you know, here you are, God provided you with all these devices. You can cheat yourself for the rest of eternity, no problem. And you will have this feeling of false happiness despite of this. So the main need and the first premise which we have to understand, we need salvation. We need, and the real salvation, the real solution for all our problems is this close association with the Lord. Nothing else. But because we have this perverted intelligence, perverse intelligence, faulty and dirty intelligence, even when we're seeking salvation, even when we understand that we need something, this final state of liberation, still we carry out the same kind of misconceptions into the realm of religion. And this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining in Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, and I will briefly explain this. He explains the four motivations which is the driving force for people to execute religion, to practice religion. He says there is baya, there is asha, kartavya buddhi, and finally raga, or attachment. And he says that two first motivations, baya and asha, and baya means fear, and asha means hope or desire. We know this word, asha. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, mogasha, moga karmana, moga asha. So, moga jnana vichetasam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that these two first motivations are totally wrong. And if people try to practice religion, being driven by this motivation or using these motivations as a driving force, the destination which they will attain will be false as well. He says that these motivations, baya and asha, fear and desire to get something from the Lord, or hope to achieve something as a reward for our religious practices, is very base motivations. He uses this word, very low-class motivations. And I started describing that there are different religions which are entirely based on these motivations, like Buddhism. Buddhism, as I said yesterday, totally based on this fear. You know, the whole material world is bad. And being polite, they don't explicitly say that there is God who created this miserable world for us to be tortured in this world. The whole concept of Buddhism is that God is the torturer, and this whole world is the torture chamber. And here you experience this, and the only escape, the only conception of salvation or liberation in Buddhism is just to commit suicide totally, become nothing. You know, you try to escape this torture chamber by committing suicide. That's it. Finished. So this is a base religion and base motivation. I'm sorry to say this if some of you are Buddhists or want to be Buddhist or have some illusions about this religion. So I'm sorry, but this is not a good religion at all. And then, of course, and we see also that in some Christian traditions, they also try to exploit or employ this fear, which is totally explicitly material emotion, which is coming from our material conditioning, and they're trying to exploit fear to push people to practice religion, like some, you know, preachers, especially in the United States, they are famous for this. They are coming, and I heard they are coming to Russia too. They are coming and they started screaming on the top of their lungs, you know, you'll go to hell, you'll go to hell, unless you surrender to Jesus. And everyone is supposed to jump in a swimming pool to get baptized. There is a mass baptism there. They make the lectures in the swimming pool, so the swimming pool is nearby, so that everyone could execute this process of salvation in a very easy way, you know, just jump in a swimming pool. but this is all ridiculous concepts. You know, I remember I was in the United States in this conference in the United States of the spiritual leaders of the world. And different people of different traditions came. There were Jews, there were Christians, Muslims, and Buddhists, and Hare Krishnas were there as well. So there was a very strange kind of gathering there. And everyone was supposed to speak something about their tradition, and everyone was looking at everyone else with little kind of, you know, feeling of sadness, you know, these poor people, they're all condemned. But at the same time, they were trying to communicate something. And then there was a turn of one lady from America. She is the daughter of this famous preacher, Billy Graham. And she's Anne Graham. But everyone was kind of polite. Everyone was saying, of course, we are the best and we are the only one who know the truth. But, you know, because we have to speak in this format, we have to be polite. But this lady, you know, she climbed over to the stage and she, you know, and in 30 seconds she started screaming, "Jesus is the only way and only Jesus can save you." She created such a tremor, you know, in everyone. Shall we hurry up? Shall we better change something? But this is, again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the very attempt to try to exploit this emotion is low, is false. And then another motivation is, of course, this asha, or desire for reward from the Lord, or desire or hope to get something from the Lord, which is also actually very base. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explains that if you ask the Lord about something else, which is not the Lord himself, it means that you placed this thing which you're asking from the Lord higher than the Lord. In your system of values, this thing which you are begging from him is more important than him. You're coming to the Lord, who is the source of everything, who is most blissful spiritual personality, and you're saying, please give me this, you know, little car, because I need the car. And basically it means to say to the Lord, I don't need you, right? I don't need you. And this is what also so many religion practice, and even being proud of. Like there is one Jewish rabbi, and he said in one of his books, he said that Judaism is the best religion. Why? He explained why. It is the best religion of all, because you can be perfect Jew without even believing in God. You don't need to believe in God to be a good Jew. You just have to follow the rules and regulations, that's it. And God is something, you know, secondary. You know, you just follow these rules and regulations, you get what you need from God. You know, there is a sure process to get what you need. So again, this is the same misconception which is carried out into the religious or spiritual sphere, when we have this wrong understanding of what religion is all about, and we're trying to use the religion for this kind of purposes. There is a very nice book recently published in Russian, which is called Children Writes to God. There one clever man in Russia, writer, he asked different children in schools, you know, from the first grade, second grade, small children, to write something to God, to write a letter to God. And then he published a book, which is consisting of these letters. And basically, usually it's just one sentence or two sentences, but the sentences are very revealing. And actually the whole scope of human religions are there in this little book, which are coming from this naive and, you know, they are not clever enough to hide their motivations. So they write very openly what they want from God. And sometimes they want ridiculous things, you know. And sometimes they use some clever devices also. You know, there is one, the best letter sounds like this. One boy, he writes to God. He's from the first grade. He said, "When I first see you, my dear Lord, when I first see you, I will not ask you for anything." And you will think, such a nice and humble boy, and give me Mercedes car. So, when I first approach you, I will not ask you anything, but, you know, you please take the note that to reward me, you have to give me some nice Mercedes car. But basically, this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Why this? Or if we take Muslim religion, again, big religion in this world, and all these people who are killing other people on the name of religion, which is totally ridiculous, absolutely horrendous. So I saw once one of them was interviewed, and they asked him, "Why are you doing this?" He said, "Because it is said in our religion that if you do this, then immediately you will be transferred into heaven, and there in heaven already 70 virgins are waiting for you. And you will possess these 70 virgins there." So this is, therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's virgins. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this is very base motivations, which are unfortunately employed or even, exploited in many, many religions of this world. And then he says that the first acceptable motivation, and actually this is a very important motivation for all of us, because this is the motivation which we can realistically use in our religious practices. The first motivation from which the pure relationship with God may start is called Kartavya Buddhi. And Kartavya Buddhi means the sense of duty. You're doing this because you feel obliged. Basically, this motivation, it's a motivation of gratitude. The real religion, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, starts from this feeling within the heart that God is the source of everything, He provided me with everything, and as soon as I feel this, as soon as I feel this gratitude towards the Lord, then, and that's the reason why I practice religion. I may not have raga or attachment to the Lord. And who has? Maybe Satchinanda Maharaj. But it's a rare thing. You cannot really demand this. And you cannot really employ this in the preaching as well. But the real religion starts from this Kartavya Buddhi. And Kartavya Buddhi basically means that you see the Lord as Father. The Lord is your Father. Or, as Krishna explains himself, he actually also explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. In Chaturslokya of Bhagavad Gita, he says, and Chaturslokya of Bhagavad Gita, the first verse of Chaturslokya of Bhagavad Gita, that's the beginning of real religion. He says, "Aham sarvasya prabhava matah sarvam pravartate, iti matva bhajanti man buddha bhava samanvitava." He says that first thing which you have to understand, from which real theological journey may start in your life, is this aham sarvasya prabhava matah sarvam pravartate. Everything which you have is coming from me. And that's basically the conception of the Lord as Father. Because Father is who? Is the one who provides us with everything, is the one who gives us everything, is the one who whom we have to feel some sense of duty. And it's actually often the case that we may not feel very strong attachment, but we do feel that we are obliged to him. And that's Kartavya Buddhi. But then he says, but actually he says the real motivation and the real religion, and I heard that today Satchinanda Maharaj was speaking about this. I'm sorry that I was absent on your class. So he says that the real religion really starts with raga. That Kartavya Buddhi is just the preparation, and Kartavya Buddhi is the motivation for Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is behind the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, there is this driving force of sense of duty, or obligation, or gratitude. And then when you feel this gratitude, gradually this raga or attachment to the Lord appears. And this is the highest conception of God. Actually, if we analyze these motivations, we can see that this motivation corresponds very clearly to the conceptions of God. You know, if you see God as the torturer, you will ultimately say there is no God. There is no God. I don't want to have this God. And therefore, your salvation or your goal, your prayojana will be nothingness, shunya. If you see the God who just punishes justly, then you will try to somehow or other, you know, to escape the punishment and you will employ the fear. If you see the Lord who is not just punishing but also rewarding, then you will employ this asha, and asha will, you will try to be pious, so to speak, conventionally pious, to get the reward for this and follow some rules and regulations. If you see the Lord as the Father, then you will execute religion driven by this kartavya buddhi or sense of duty. But if you see the Lord as the most beautiful, as the most blissful personality, then the raga will appear and raga will be your driving force. If you really understand who the Lord is, then the raga will appear. Actually, there is a very nice story in this regard about one great muni of the past, Lokasaranga Muni. Lokasaranga Mahamuni, he was a saint and he was living in the north of India. He was a great saint, and once somebody brought to him a book from the south. And this book was Divya Prabandha, The Songs of Alvars. And he read this book. And he immediately started packing his things. Luckily, he didn't have much things to pack. So the man who gave him the book, he came and he said, "What did you remember from this book?" He said, "I don't remember anything. The only thing which I remember is that Tirumangai Alvar, in one of his hymns, he calls God Aravamude. And Aravamude means the sweetest nectar which is there, the sweetest possible nectar, the highest possible bliss." And he said, "When I heard this name of God, I immediately decided to give up my residence here and go down and live with these people who have this conception of God as the most sweetest thing in the world." He said, "I do not want to live here among these people who don't understand who God is. This is the real highest understanding of God, and I only want to live with such people. I don't want to live with anybody else, because this is what totally, you know." He said, this shocked me, because in the south, in the north, they were more into, you know, rules and regulations. And this conception before Lord Chaitanya was not so prominent in the north of India. But when he heard this name, you know, he immediately understood, this is where I should be, because this is the best place to be with. Of course, there are different names of God which reveals different conceptions of God. I was told that there is one Zulu tribe in Africa. And they have a very special name for God, also very interesting. They say God is one who has the more cows than anyone else. And we agree with this name, because this is what God is. But again, the highest conception of God and highest understanding of God, which we have to really clearly see and really clearly understand, is that, you know, we need God. We don't need anything else. We need only Him, because He is the highest nectar. There is also a very nice story in this regard about the salvation in Mahabharata. And this is a story about Mudgala Rishi. Mudgala Rishi was a great Rishi, and he was living in Kurukshetra. And he was doing Mahayagya, Maha sacrifice. His sacrifice was that he was eating for 2 weeks. And for the next 2 weeks, he was not eating, he was only taking grains from the field, which were left by the farmers, you know, little grains. And whatever he would cook, he would take little rice, which he picked up from the fields. It is called Kapata Yagya or Uncha or whatever, Vritti. And the livelihood of the pigeon, you know, how the pigeons are taking food. So whatever he would cook, first he would invite a guest. And the guest would eat, and whatever is left over, then he would feed his family members. He had a son and wife, and then the rest he would eat himself. And if it was nothing, he didn't eat for 2 weeks. And then for the rest of 2 weeks, he again would eat, and then he would not eat again. So once Durvasa Muni heard about this, and Durvasa Muni has a very important mission in life. He is checking how sincere everyone is. You know, that's his main kind of, you know, pleasure in life. So, and Durvas means, he's a very eccentric person. Durvas means, Dur means bad, and Vas means close. Basically means, Durvas means that he is very poorly dressed. Guess what it means? It means that he's not dressed at all. Durvas means that he's going around naked. So it's just a very polite way of saying that someone is naked. You know? He's poorly dressed. So Durvasa Muni came to this Mudgala Rishi, and he wanted to check how sincere he is. He wanted really to check, is this guy sincere or he is just a fake? He is just a pretender. He is doing all these austerities, and he wanted to see if he is okay or not. So that was the time when Mudgala Rishi would invite guests. So he came and he said, I heard that you are feeding all the guests. So here I am, please feed me. So Mudgala Rishi gave him this rice and said, please eat. And he ate everything. And at the same time, he was shouting insulting words left and right. You know, you're a rascal and you're a fool and you're such a dirty man. And he was eating this, you know. Very nice guest, you know, came to your house. He's naked, you know, and he's insulting you left and right. So, and at the same time, he's looking, you know, how does he react? And, you know, Mudgala Rishi is very cool and calm. And he ate everything and he said, I want more. So Mudgala Rishi brought him more. And he ate more. And he ate everything which was there. Little was left. And not to leave anything, he took all these dirty remnants of his own food and smeared it all over his body. And laughing and looking at Mudgala Rishi. And Mudgala Rishi was cool. He said, thank you very much. You know, he washed his feet and said, you know, please come tomorrow. And this Durvasa Muni said, sure enough, I will come. Don't worry. So, because he was not satisfied, he said, maybe for one day he can tolerate it. Let's see what he will say tomorrow. He came tomorrow. He came the next day. He came 6 days in a row. And in the meantime, the wife of Mudgala Rishi started crying. She said, you know, I want to eat something. He said, no, you cannot eat because this Muni, Durvas, he's just putting everything in his body. He's smearing his body with the remnants. There is nothing for you to eat. I'm sorry. So she was standing there crying, and the son, little son, is crying, but the Muni was totally calm and totally unperturbed for 6 days. And finally, this Durvasa Muni said, okay, you are real. And therefore, I'm giving you blessings. Now, in this very body, you can get liberation. Immediately, right away. And in front of his eyes, because of the blessings of Durvasa Muni, who is a very powerful sage, the Viman from the heavenly planets came. And there was a swan there, and there was a messenger from heaven. And the messenger was very happy, and he said, Mudgala Rishi, come, this is a Viman for you. And we will take you to heaven. And Mudgala Rishi, he looked at this guy and he said, wait a second, let's check it, what is there. Could you please explain, because I don't want to go somewhere, God knows where. I want to make sure that my destination is good. So, you know, could you please explain to me, where are you taking me, where are you going to take me? So this messenger said, yeah, I'm going to take you to heaven, and the heaven is very nice. And he started describing the heaven. The heaven is such a nice place, it's an opulent place, and the, you know, nicest smells and aromas are permeating the air, and the breezes are so nice, and the sun is always shining, and there is no hunger, and all the people are nice. All the people are so pious, and the only pious and nice people are there. And then the Mudgalari said, that's good. Is there something bad? And he said very important things. He said that there is no sweat there, and there is no urine there, and there is no bad smell. I suspect that when this messenger from heaven came to the earth plane, he immediately felt this bad smell of, you know, urine, as you always feel in India, you know, if you go to a field, you smell this. So he started advertising the heaven, saying that there is no urine there, there is no sweat there, there is no bad smells there. And then he said, your clothes will never become dirty. Your clothes is always clean. No need to go to the, you know, to the dry cleaners or to whatever. There is no need for washing machines and the washing powder. Everything is pukka. And then he said, all the inhabitants of heaven, they have a garlands, and these garlands are ever fresh, and they always have these beautiful garlands, and everyone is walking. And then Mudgalari said, is there anything bad in the heaven? And then the messenger, being truthful and pious person, he said, yeah, there is one thing which is bad. You know, all these people who are wearing these nice fresh garlands for a long time, you know, and they're fresh all the time. At one point, the garland becomes, you know, withered, becomes little dry and more dry. And when the garland becomes dry, the inhabitant of heaven knows, that's it. My time here is finished. And he becomes very fearful, and then very quickly he goes back to this earthly plane and goes again. And then Mudgalari said, sorry, I'm not going there. No way. I'm not going to this place, because I may be enjoying for a long time, but when my garland becomes dry, you know, I will come back again, you know. And then he said, I'm not going with you, you go back. Now, just imagine that you had this opportunity, you know, that Viman from the heavenly planet came to you and said, come on, you know, be serious, get on this plane, go there, you know, it's so nice. Would you say no? Therefore, Vimanas don't come to us. We would say, of course, we would jump in and go to heaven. So this Mudgalari said, I'm going only to Vaikuntha, only to Vishnuloka, because if one goes there, there is no end. In any other place in this material realm, it's Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, Brahma Bhuvanalaka. As Krishna says, everyone, everywhere else, there is an end to happiness, even if this happiness is so huge. And therefore, the point is here, is that one has to have a very strong, and that's actually a taste, test, exam for us. We have to have a very strong face and very strong heart to have this goal, which is the highest. Otherwise, it's very easy to kind of, exchange for something lower. And this is what Krishna is calling Hridaurbalyam. Hridaurbalyam means weakness of the heart. So we have to have, the point is here, that we have to be very strongly established in the highest goal. And the highest goal is Krishna. Highest goal is person. Krishna is person, not the heaven, not anything else, not anything less than him. And if anyone else comes to us and offers something else, you know, we have to be very adamant. We have to check, is it really Krishna or is it not? And, I know when I tell this story to Russian devotees, when I speak about heavenly planets, I say, you know, Or to speak about heavenly planets, if somebody would say, here's the free ticket to America, would you go there or not? And of course, all Russian devotees, they put their eyes down because they all want to immigrate to America. So, and that's actually, that's what Prabhupada, it's also, there is a very interesting story about Prabhupada. Shrutakirti told this story. Shrutakirti was at that time servant of Prabhupada, and it was in Vrindavan. And of course we know Vrindavan, we know India. In India, people, they are, you know, they are after West sometimes, and they want to also to go to America, usually. So Prabhupada was very proud of his disciples. And actually he was proud of his capacity, or of his ability to instill this highest goal very firmly in our hearts. That was his main pride. So once Shrutakirti remembers this episode, he said that there was a, you know, big assembly of Indians in Vrindavan, the different Indians, and some of them are quite rich, you know, came to see Prabhupada for a darshan. And Shrutakirti was standing there. And Prabhupada was very proudly saying, This is my American disciples. And they will not exchange me for $1 million. You know, if somebody will offer them $1 million, they will not give me up and take the $1 million. And he looked at Shrutakirti, Prabhupada, very proudly. And you know, he's trying to explain this business minded people, you know, how highly they value bhakti. How highly they value, his disciples value this relationship with the spiritual master. And he looked at Shrutakirti and said, is it true, Shrutakirti? And Shrutakirti, of course, being the obedient servant, says, yes, Prabhupada, yes, yes. Yes, and then when he told the story, you know, there was a big audience of devotees, they started clapping, and then he said, wait a minute, don't clap, because so far nobody offered me $1 million. And if somebody would offer, I'm not so sure. I can tell you very honestly, you know, only if I would reject $1 million and say, no, I stay with you at your lotus feet, only this, in this case you could clap. Otherwise... So, and that, you know, in other words, we have to be very clear about the position of our own heart. Is it really so that we want Krishna? Or we want something, you know, how highly we value Krishna? What if it's not $1 million? What if it's $10 million? Would we take? what is the price in our consciousness? that's actually the amazing feature of our school. Only Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya promotes this goal of Panchama Purushartha, Prema Pumartha Mahan, that the highest goal is Prema. If you take four other Vaishnava Sampradayas, if you take Ramanuja, Madhva, Nimbarka, Vallabhacharya, whatever, Vishnuswami, who is... So, in any other sampradaya, the goal is moksha. And moksha basically means, at best, on the level of Kartavya Buddhi. Moksha means that you are there in the heaven, in the highest heaven, in Vaikuntha, but you are still using everything from the Lord, not trying to get Him. And only by this raga, by the real attachment, genuine attachment, we can get this this goal, and we can achieve this goal. So, I mean, I'm still not finished the introduction to my course. Today I wanted to speak about three levels of Shabda, but I will not be able to do this, so I will do it about four levels of Shabda, about Vaikari Vak, Madhyama Vak, Pashyanti Vak, and Paravak. And how these different levels of speech or different levels of sound are invested with different energies of the Lord, and how actually this is the process of material creation, and how we can reverse this process of creation. But I will not speak this. This is a big, very important topic about different levels of sound, and how Jiva Goswami explains this in his Sandarbhas, and the process of liberation through reversing this process of creation. But for last few minutes, which is still there, I will try to explain some other thing, some other interesting point from Bhagavad Gita, from the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Actually, the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the most important for this topic, because the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how it's called? Who remembers?
Purushottama.
Yeah, Purushottama Yoga. Yeah, the Yoga of Supreme Person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is explained there. But what is the beginning of this chapter? How Krishna approaches this topic of Purushottama Yoga, or Yoga of Highest Person? How does he? Banyan tree, yes. And not only Banyan tree, before, even after Banyan tree, he explains the process of transmigration. And the Banyan tree, what is this metaphor is all about? Material world, yeah. Not just material world, but the entanglement in the material world. So before approaching this topic of Supreme Person, Krishna explains the miserable situation of the living being, which is totally, completely, utterly lost in this material world. Traveling in all these branches of the banyan tree, and even using Vedas. It's interesting. This very point is extremely interesting if we analyze this whole 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, because this chapter starts, what is the leaves on this banyan tree? Hymns of Vedas, right? So basically, what Krishna is saying, that the hymns of Vedas is the means for your entanglement in the material world. Is the means of your perpetual existence in this material world. Your traveling or your crawling through one branch to another branch, from one planetary system to another planetary system, using this leaves of Vedas, hymns of Vedas, for to stay here in the material world. And then he also says, he speaks about transmigration of the soul. He speaks how this, the problem of the transmigration of samsara, how it's perpetuated, how the soul is changing one body into another body by using the subtle body as the vehicle. But then there is a very interesting section which starts from the verse number 12 to the verse number 15. Extremely interesting and deep if we try to analyze this. After explaining this samsara, or transmigration, after explaining this entanglement or miserable condition of the living entity and needs for liberation, what he says, who remembers what he says next? Yes, exactly. I am the light in the sun, in the moon, and in the fire. What he means by this? Yes, yes, but not only this. He says, I am the light in the sun, in the moon, and in the fire. Then he says, I am upholding this earth, and I am nourishing all these vegetables. And then he says that sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtu matak sarvam jnanam apohanam cha vedascha sarvaya raham eva vidyo vedanta krit veda viteva chaham. Actually, what Krishna explains here, he explains the three features of the absolute truth. First, he says, I am the effulgence. I am the source of effulgence. He says, I am the light in the sun, and I am the light in the moon, and I am the light in the fire. And any light which you see is my effulgence. And ultimately, what is the effulgence of Krishna? What is the nature of effulgence? What is the nature of light? It's consciousness. Ultimately, the darkness is the sleep or tamagun or lack of consciousness. But first he says, by my light, by the light of my consciousness, which is Brahmajyoti, all-pervading Brahmajyoti, I pervade this whole universe. But, you know, if we take the lead of Prabhupada, how he explains in the purport to the 15th verse, which I quoted, this whole situation. First he says Brahmajyoti. Then he says Sarvasya Chaham Hridisa Nivishtu Matak Sarvam Dhyanam Apoham Cha. What is this? I am in the heart of every living being, and what I am doing? I am giving memory and forgetfulness. And then he says, Vedaischa sarva aham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda videva chaham. So he explains the three features in a very interesting way. If we take the lead of Prabhupada in this purport to the 15th verse, we will see that Prabhupada will say that Paramatma has the double function within the heart of living entity. What is this double function of Paramatma? Yeah, but what is exactly, for what? Forgetfulness for what? Remembrance for what? He explains very interestingly, very deeply. Prabhupada gives a very profound purport to this verse. He says that Paramatma within the heart can liberate, and Paramatma within the heart can do what? Can entangle you, can perpetuate your heart, your karma, depending on your desire. You know, Paramatma can give you forgetfulness for what? To stay in this world and to enjoy in this world. Paramatma can give you memory again to stay in this world. And again, Paramatma can give you memory for what? For liberation. The same way, Brahmajyoti can liberate and can entangle. Brahmajyoti in the material function, when Krishna says, I am the sun of the moon, I am the light of the sun and the moon. What the light of the sun gives to us? Enjoyment. You know, we enjoy. When the sun comes up, we become really enthusiastic to enjoy. And then when the moon rises, we become even more enthusiastic to enjoy. So, this feature of consciousness is can be entangling. In this material world, if we use it separately from Krishna, Brahmajyoti, it can be the cause of our entanglement in this world. It can actually put us in bondage in this material world, and giving us enjoyment. And of course, the fire of digestion, what is it for? It's, again, to give us the strength to enjoy more. And Krishna says, yes, I am here in these features to make you stay here. But I also can give, because ultimately that's me. This is, if you understand that that's me, that this consciousness, this light is coming from me, you will be able to understand, you will be able to be enlightened. And you will be able to understand the liberation. And then he said to achieve the liberation or some kind of elevated state of enlightenment. Then he says, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sannivishtu, again, as Paramatma, I can liberate you, and as Paramatma, I can achieve or make sure that you harvest the fruits of your karma. And you will be harvesting the fruits of your karma with the help of Paramatma. That's the specific specific function of Paramatma. But then he says how his personal feature manifests. Bhagavan, how you can achieve discover his personal feature. What he says?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What does he say? Yeah. Yes. So, he says that Vedaischa sarvai raham eva vedyo vedanta krit veva davideva chaham. The point which Krishna makes here is very essential, that by your own endeavors or by other so-called religious practice, you can achieve Paramatma state or enlightened state. Brahmajyoti state or Paramatma state even. You can understand God as the controller, and you can understand God as the all-pervading light, all-pervading consciousness. But how you can understand God as a person? Yeah. Vedaischa sarvai raham eva vidyo vedanta krit veda videva chaham. And again, Vedas play double role. What is the double role? Yeah. Vedas, they can entangle you. Vedas can perpetuate your material staying because they are designed in a special way. But at the same time, if you employ Vedas properly, Vedaischa sarvai raham eva vidyo, you can understand me as the person. And this is actually the double function of the Vedic sound. The Vedic sound can entangle you. The Vedic sound can be the cause of your entanglement. And the Vedic sound can be the cause of your liberation by giving you the highest knowledge of the Supreme Person. Bringing you closer, face to face to the Supreme Person. Giving you the interview of the Supreme Person. So that's, and afterwards, from this point, Krishna explains how it happens, how actually Vedas, because this is the real topic of the 15th chapter, the Vedas, and how the Vedas gives us the possibility for the personal meeting with the Supreme Person, to have this Purushottama Yoga. So, and this is here now, finally, we came to this point, Anavriti Shabda, how the Shabda, and only Shabda, can give you Krishna as the person. How only spiritual sound can bring you close, face to face, to the Supreme Person, who is Krishna himself. And this will be the topic of tomorrow's class, about different kinds of speech and the different mechanisms and the different energies in different kinds of speech. Thank you very much.